Have you ever noticed how the good fortune of one person can become the complete aggravation of many other people? Are you a person who is aggravated by the good fortune of another person? Or do you possess that trait of true joy when good fortune comes to someone else? Such was the case with the good fortune of the nation of Israel. And in many ways, with the shrewdness of the Gibeonites in avoiding forever being destroyed, even though they were Canaanites. So as chapter 10 opens, the Amorite kings in the south and the southwest of Jericho were aggravated to the point of fear, and their fear would bring them doom. So the writer of the book of Joshua opens with the Amorite king's fear and what the king heard in chapter 10 and in verse 1. Now it came about when Adonai Zedek, king of Jerusalem, heard that Joshua had captured Ai and had utterly destroyed it, and that the inhabitants of Gibeon had made peace with Israel and were within their land, that he feared greatly, because Gibeon was a great city, like one of the royal cities, and because it was greater than Ai, and all its men were mighty. Adonai Zedek was the Amorite king of Jerusalem. Adonai means Lord. Zedek means justice. So he was the king of justice. Jerusalem is actually Jeru-Salem. Jeru means the inhabitants of, or a city of, and Salem means peace. Therefore, Adonai Zedek was the Lord of justice of Jerusalem, the city of peace. Now, Jerusalem stands just 32 miles from the Great Sea, the Mediterranean. It's 18 miles from the Jordan River. It's 20 miles from Hebron, and it's 12 miles from Jericho. The city of Jerusalem stands in the Amorite tribal area just south of the great citadel of the Jebusites in their territory. So what we're trying to say to you is Jerusalem stands right on the borderline between the Amorite territory and the Jebusite territory, and that's where it sits. The dividing line kind of runs southwest to northeast as that boundary line runs between there. Now, being just 12 miles from Jericho, Adonai Zedek was fearful of the nation of Israel because of that victory over Jericho, the victory over Ai, and the covenant with the Gibeons. Now, as we discovered back in chapter 8, verse 25, Ai had 12,000 inhabitants at the time of its defeat. What we just learned is Gibeon was larger than that, larger than Ai. So evidently, Gibeon was greater than Jerusalem at the time also. And Adonai Zedek realized that he needed help. So the writer tells us of King Adonai Zedek and what the king did in verse number 3. Therefore, Adonai Zedek, king of Jerusalem, sent word to Hoham, king of Hebron, to Piram, king of Jarmuth, and to Japha, king of Lachish, and to Debir, king of Eglon, saying, "Come up to me and help me, and let us attack Gibeon. It has made peace with Joshua and with the sons of Israel." So the five kings of the Amorites, the king of Jerusalem, the king of Hebron, the king of Jarmuth, the king of Lachish, and the king of Eglon, gathered together and went up, they with all their armies, and camped by Gibeon and fought against it. So, the cities of Hebron, Jarmuth, Lachish, and Eglon stood in this hill country in the Amorite territory just west of the Dead Sea. And the Gibeonites were the Hittite cousins of these Amorites. Yet that did not matter. Adonai Zedek, Hoham, Piram, Japhia, and Debir joined together with their armies to attack the Gibeonites because they had a covenant to be the servants of Israel forever. So seeing the armies of these five Amorite kings camped right outside their door from Lachish, from Hebron to Gibeon, from Jerusalem is right there, Jerusalem. There's a problem here. So as these servants of the covenant have this covenant with Israel, what could Gibeon do? Well, the leaders of Gibeon and those four cities reached out with Joshua and called for help in verse 7. Then the men of Gibeon sent word to Joshua to the camp at Gilgal, that's where they're stationed, saying, "Do not abandon your servants. Come up to us quickly and save us and help us. For all the kings of the Amorites that live in the hill country have assembled against us." So Joshua leaves Gilgal to help the Gibeonites, and he does it immediately. Verse number 7. So Joshua went up from Gilgal, he and all the people of war with him, and all the valiant warriors. So when Joshua leaves to help the Gibeonites, here's what happens. First, we see that the camp of the nation of Israel was back in Gilgal, back in that Arabah on the west side of the Jordan River, where it settled in for the first night after they had crossed the Jordan River on the 10th of Nisan back in 1424 BC. However, we do not know the timing of the month or the year at this point because the writer gives us no indication. We don't know where we are in time, since how long it's been since they've settled the first night there in Gilgal. Second, Joshua took his valiant warriors only to fight at Gibeon. So the camp remained back at Gilgal, and the warriors with Joshua come to Gibeon to fight against these kings. Approaching Gibeon, Joshua hears of help from the Lord. The Lord speaks to him in verse number 8. The Lord said to Joshua, "Do not fear them, for I have given them into your hands. Not one of them shall stand before you." So in a strange turn of events, these five Amorite kings have delivered themselves into the hand of the nation of Israel and into the hands of the Lord. As promised, they're going to be defeated. So after the battle, these five Amorite cities will be so severely hurt and they will be under new leadership that when Joshua finally shows up on their doorsteps, they're not going to have the organization to defeat them because their kings are going to be, as we'll find out, locked up in a cave. It takes all night, but Joshua arrives to help in verse 9. So Joshua came upon them suddenly by marching all night from Gilgal, and the Lord confounded them before Israel, and he slew them with a great slaughter at Gibeon, and pursued them by the way of the ascent of Beth-horam, and struck them as far as Askah and Makkedah. So Joshua and his valiant warriors did not rest. They attacked the Amorites there at Gibeon at the break of dawn and the break of the day. And many of the king's men started to retreat towards Beth-horon and, of course, towards Azek, which is right there beside it. Beth-horon means the house of caves or house of caverns. The caves or caverns rest beneath these mountains here that are still right there. Therefore, to arrive at Beth-horon, the army had to march past the mountains of Gibeon and begin down over here and then come up on Beth-horon. It lay on the boundary line of the future tribal area of, it's going to come right through here, of Ephraim. That's where it's located. So they're moving across this country. Benjamin's going to come right in there and tuck in there also. Azekah means dug over. So Azekah sits in this rich farmland just right here by Beth-horon. And that's going to be here in the tribal area of Judah. These three tribal areas are going to come right together. Makkedah, which we're going to end up here, means the place of the shepherds. It's in shepherd country. So, and it's a Canaanite city, and it sits 25 miles southeast of Jerusalem, right down here, Makkedah, about 25 miles from Jerusalem. All right. Now, in the battle, the writer tells us that Joshua sees the help. Verse 11. So as they fled from before the Lord, while they were at the descent of Beth-horon, where they're coming down off of Beth-horon, the Lord threw large stones from heaven on them as far as Askah, and they died. There were more who died from the hailstones than those who the sons of Israel killed with the sword. So consider that Joshua attacked the Amorites at daybreak at Gibeon. Here they are. It's about a two-hour march through to chase them all the way through, the Amorites all the way through up to Beth Horon and down on the other side and on to Askah. It's about a two-hour journey. And on that journey, the Lord sends a hailstorm. And the hailstorm is so bad that it kills more people than they're killed by the sword. More killed than Israel killed them by these hailstones. So at that time, Joshua does something interesting. While they're doing this storm, he pleads for help from the Lord. You see, more daylight was needed to finish the battle in Joshua's eyes. Even though the sun had not reached high noon yet, at verse number 12, Joshua is pleading for more daylight. Verse 12, "Then Joshua spoke to the Lord in the day when the Lord delivered up the Amorites before the sons of Israel. And he said in the sight of Israel, 'O sun, stand still at Gibeon, and O moon in the valley of Ajalon.' So the sun stood still and the moon stopped until the nation avenged themselves of their enemies." If the Lord answered this plea of Joshua, it will go against all the laws of physical order that's put in place on that first day of creation. The sun never speeds up, it never slows down. The moon never ever sets in one course and it never changes its course. So will the sun stand still and the moon stop? Well, the writer uses the book of Jasher to prove that Joshua's record for help was true in verse 13b. "Is it not written in the book of Jasher, 'The sun stopped in the middle of the sky and did not hasten to go down for about a whole day. There was no day like that before it or after it when the Lord listened to the voice of a man, for the Lord fought for Israel.'" Jasher means upright in the Hebrew language. And the writer alludes to this book as being the book of Jasher being the book of the upright. Now, it was an ancient collection of records of honored men and noble deeds among the Israelites in the Israelite community. And it will be mentioned again in 2 Samuel chapter 1, verse 18. The book has not survived the years since the fall of the northern and the southern kingdoms, but nevertheless, it was an actual book where Israel had recorded all the deeds of Joshua, and it was widely accepted in the day when the writer completes this book. But we must ask the question, why did the writer stop his line of the history of the miraculous day to insert a quote from a poetical book of the day? He interjected the quote because it was true. The Lord of creation can do as He pleases with a simple command, and the natural order of the sun and the moon can shift. Some have said that the earth was the place where the miracle actually happened. They said that the earth began to change its tilt, and it was changed that day to effect the miracle. But I must say to you, why could it not have been just stopped? That the sun, the Lord stopped the sun that day and stopped its movement. It was one or it was the other. No less. One of the two things happened. The earth changed, or the moons and sun stopped. I think it stopped. The miracle occurred for the day like no other day or since. When the Lord does something, He can do it. He spoke all this into being in 6 days. Why couldn't He do that? Speaking of the nature of the Lord, Habakkuk will say this in Habakkuk 3:10. "You cleave to the earth with rivers. The mountains saw you and quaked. The downpour of water swept by. The deep uttered forth its voice. It lifted high its hands. Sun and moon stood in their places." Even Habakkuk says it's possible. The Lord can do as He pleases with His creation any day, any time, and that includes you. One day He will come as a man, fully God and fully man. Why not? He can do it because He pleases. It may defy our finite mind, but it cannot defy His infinite power and will. He will one day rise from the dead in the future of Joshua's book. How can a man raise from the dead? We cannot comprehend it, but it is simple for him. After all, he spoke everything into being with just a word. With a word, the sun and the moon can seem to stop moving. So when the battle was over, Joshua rests from the help with his Israelite servants there at Gibeon. He goes back to the camp of the Israelites in verse number 15. Then Joshua and all of Israel with him returned to the camp to Gilgal. The time of rest was not long for Joshua, I can tell you that because I'm reading on. His men heard that the Amorite kings had escaped Joshua's attack. And in our outline, we come to the Amorite kings caught and secured in the cave at Makkedah with an order from Joshua to seal the entry in verse 16. Now, these five kings had fled and hid themselves in the cave at Makkedah. It was told Joshua, saying, "The five kings have been found hidden in the cave at Makkedah." And Joshua said, "Roll large stones against the mouth of the cave and assign men by it to guard them. There is the cave. There are some of the large stones that were in front of that hole that held those men in that cave." The cowering kings had hidden in that cave at Makkedah, and now they could not come out. As the report reached the ear of Joshua, his order to seal the cave with large stones came out. And with the sealing of the cave, we notice that Joshua ordered the assigning of men to guard the cave too. He did not want those kings to get away. The rest of the men were ordered to pursue the enemies that had gotten away. Some had gotten away. And we have the order to slay the enemy and the report of the ones that Israel killed in verse 19. "But do not stay there yourselves. Pursue your enemies and attack them in the rear. Do not allow them to enter their cities, for the Lord your God has delivered them into your hands." And it came about when Joshua and the sons of Israel had finished slaying them with a great slaughter until they were destroyed. Joshua had evidently heard that the stragglers from the war with the five Amorite kings were on their way to their homes in their cities of Jerusalem and Hebron and Jarmuth and Lachish and Debir. And Joshua's mighty warriors caught up with the Amorite men as they ran home. Not all of them made it home. They were killed as they ran from behind. And while the mighty warriors were in pursuit, Joshua made camp at Makkedah with the rest of his army. Now, some of the people did make it to their cities. Not all of them were killed. Say that they did make it home. And we find that about the ones who got away in verse number 20b. "And the survivors who remained of them had entered the fortified cities. That all the people returned to the camp to Joshua at Makkedah in peace. No one uttered a word against any of the sons of Israel." The camp of Israel was pleased, very pleased. Jerusalem, Hebron, Jarmuth, Lachish, Debir were fortified cities. Some of the stragglers made it into their cities. The mighty warriors then returned of Israel, returned to Makkedah. There they kept up with Joshua. And everyone revered Joshua as their leader in the camp, and no one grumbled. The Amorites must be executed at the cave of Makkedah. So with the kings retrieved, Joshua speaks in verse number 22. "Then Joshua said, 'Open the mouth of the cave and bring these five kings out to me from the cave.' They did so and brought these five kings out to him from the cave: the king of Jerusalem, the king of Hebron, the king of Jarmuth, the king of Lachish, and the king of Eglon. And when they brought these kings out to Joshua, Joshua called for all the men of Israel and said to the chiefs of the men of war who had gone with him, 'Come near, put your feet on the necks of these kings.'" So let us set the scene. These five kings had hid in the cave at Makkedah. Joshua found out. Joshua had large stones put in front of the kings to keep them imprisoned until he got back. He then follows on down and he catches everybody. They head out from, by the way, I'm just going to go ahead and tell you, they head out and they catch them at Makkedah, they go to Libnah, they go to Lachish, they go to Eglon, they go to Hebron, and then they go back down to Debir. So it's from Makkedah to Libnah to Lachish to Eglon to Hebron and back down to Debir. That's the order that they went. And when they finished hitting these, when these people, the people they were chasing had gone into their cities, whenever they got back with to Makkedah with Joshua, Joshua has the cave open, the stones rolled back. The kings are brought out, and they are put in front of him. And he calls for the chiefs of the army. Evidently, there must have been five. There may have been more, but he calls for the chief of the army. He says, put your feet on the necks of the kings. And so a chief comes and put his feet on the neck of each of the king. A chief on each neck. The story continues with the kings disposed of in verse 24b. So they came near and put their feet on their necks. Joshua then said to them, do not fear or be dismayed. Be strong and courageous, for this the Lord will do to all your enemies with whom you fight. So afterward, Joshua struck them and put them to death. And he hanged them on five trees, and they hung on the trees until evening. It came about at sunset that Joshua gave a command, and they took them down from the trees and threw them into the cave where they had hidden themselves and put large stones over the mouth of the cave to this very day. The kings were struck down, and how were they struck down? By the sword. Their bodies were hung on five different trees as a display to the Canaanite nations of the power of God. And at evening, remember evening is our afternoon, at the end of evening, at sunset, at the end of our afternoon, the bodies were removed. They were put back in that cave where they had hid, back in that cave where they had been imprisoned, and the entry to that cave was permanently sealed. As you see by that cave, that picture, those stones have been rolled back. But I'm telling you, those bodies had decayed long before those stones rolled back. The entry was permanently sealed, and at that time of the writing of Joshua, it was still sealed when this book was completed being written. Now we come to the king hanged. One king of one city remained for that day that needed attention. He was still alive. He was not one of these five. He was a different king. We have the king hanged, and the king, his name, he's the king of Makkedah in verse 28. Now Joshua captured Makkedah that day and struck it and its king with the edge of the sword, and he utterly destroyed it and every person who was in it. He left no survivors. Thus he did to the king of Makkedah as he had done to the king of Jericho. I read this another time in these lessons. That's how we know. We knew that they were going to be hung on the tree. They were slain with a sword. They were hung on the tree all the way through the afternoon. At sunset, Joshua would have their body taken down, and they would be placed somewhere where stones would cover them up. They'd be placed where stones would cover them up. In Jericho and in Ai, they were covered up with stones into a heap for the king of Makkedah and for the king of the five kings in the cave. The kings were in the cave, were covered up with the stone, and Makkedah, the king of Makkedah here, he was totally destroyed also. With that, the same was done to the king as it was done to the king of Jericho. Just so happens. So the fear of the covenant that had been struck between the Gibeonites and the Israelites caused these Amorite kings to act in a way that hastened their death. You know, it's just that way sometimes. Sometimes We are so afraid of things that are out there that have nothing to do with us yet, that we do things that cause us to come under chastisement quicker than it should have come. Had these kings done nothing, they would have lived many, many more days. Because you see, Joshua and the nation of Israel would have had to make a campaign on each city individually. And it would have taken him time. But what these kings did by joining together is they hastened it. It was one battle. All the people of the nation, the warriors of these five kings in the city of Machadah, would have been much greater than Israel, but the Lord was fighting against them all. So I say to you this, in the future of your life, when you have fears of something that happens, don't make a mess with your decisions and cause destruction to come on you quicker. Take time. Wait until the stories are told. Now, these Canaanite kings were going to die. They were going to die at the order of the Lord through Moses. But with the order of the Lord also says to us, because He wants to bless us, just as He wanted to bless the nation of Israel, blessings and curses, well, for us. He will chastise us if we don't do His will. But all we have to do is be in His will. So if you come upon a fear, the best place for you to do is take it to the Lord in prayer, because you belong to the Lord. And He will help you with that fear. Don't do what the Amorite kings did. Don't do that.